Law Focus Podcast. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Welcome to Law Focus, the show with a staunch focus on the law. My name is Millicent Ndiweni, your voice of law for the evening, right here on VAR FM 88.1. On the 10th of October 2018, the South African Reserve Bank received the forensic investigation report into the affairs of VBS Mutual Bank. The purpose of the report was to find out whether any of VBS's business dealings were conducted with the sole purpose of committing fraud, whether its business conduct was negligently or intentionally questionable. The bank was put under curatorship in March 2018 following its liquidity crisis. It is against this backdrop that tonight we discuss the legalities of the VBS scandals. Basically, now that we know that over 2 billion rand was unlawfully extorted from the bank, where to from here? We'll be joined by the National Secretary of the South African Society of Bank Officials, SASBO, Lebohang Silipe, as well as Phumzile Kushe of the Ombudsman for Banking Services. Of course, this wouldn't be a conversation without your input. If you wish to join the conversation, you can send us a tweet on @VARFM using the hashtag LawFocus. You can also send us a voice note on WhatsApp. The number to dial is 084-078-4912. Do stay tuned for the upcoming discussion, but before we get into that, we start the show with the hottest legal stories of the week. Here are the legal hotspots.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, here's Legal Hotspot.
For our legal hotspots this week, we have in studio our law focus researcher, Siyabonga Mota. Sia, what do you have in store for us this week?
Well, this week we're starting with something that is really, really big in the country so far. The Home Affairs Minister saga. But we'll start with the issue here. It says the redistribution of personal content of sexual nature that you have received from someone is criminal. So this past weekend, Home Affairs Minister Malusi Kikaba revealed that there's a circulation of a video of himself which contains content of sexual nature, and this material is being used to blackmail him. So in principle, it says, well, I would say people were reposting the video in all sorts of social media websites like Twitter, Facebook. Some of them were doing it on WhatsApp. But in principle, Section 14 says everyone has a right to privacy. And 14D says this right to privacy includes the right to have your own communication infringed.
And I'm assuming that the section that you're referring to is directly from the Constitution.
Directly from the Constitution, of course. And it says in application, if one does this, it says when you share private sexual information or the contents of sexual nature of someone without their consent, you are in fact violating their right to privacy.
Yeah, sounds about it.
So the cause of law also emphasizes that there's no public interest in the case of law also emphasizes there is no public interest in disseminating such content.
Okay.
So in conclusion, basically, there are 2 bills currently in South African Parliament regarding this dilemma, which are expected to come into effect very, very soon.
I'm wondering, all these people who did repost the video, what's going to happen to them? Because if they were doing what is illegal, then obviously there must be repercussions.
Well, cyber crime bill and the Film and Publication Amendment bill are the ones that should determine such. Unfortunately, in South Africa, we still have to get to that point.
Okay, so when they are enacted into law, then we'll know exactly how to deal with such cases.
Yeah. They clearly stipulate that the reposting of sexual content without the consent, actually, of the parties involved will be criminalized. So there are many other incidents, though. There has been a lady who changed her name after her ex-boyfriend took a video of them having sex and posted it on a pornographic website after they broke up. So be careful not to post things on the internet that you are not proud of because they stay there forever.
Yeah, I guess we should just take the advice, eh?
Yeah.
And stop reposting things of other people. It's none of our business.
So when you go to our second story,
yeah, what do we have?
More items are said to be zero rated when it comes to texts.
That sounds important.
So the value-added tax was increased for the first time in South Africa since 1994 to 15%. This increase was a bit of to avoid an increase of personal taxes. Fortunately, the tax law allows us to have items or products on the market that are being that are not taxed, actually. Mm. So that way they are more affordable too. The poor people.
That's important.
Yeah, so the principle there, there are both laws and policies which handle zero rating of products, such as the white paper released in 1998, the comprehensive business tax, the Mago Commission tax law. So when you apply this, a panel has to sit and review this list of items and all other complexities actually surrounding zero rating. You know, it is a system that is used to benefit the poor, the working class. So it's a bit of both, actually.
Yeah.
So although zero rating items will also cost the country $1.2 billion, on the other hand, it has this loss of revenue that restores the dignity of South African, poor South Africans.
Yeah. And we've been talking about zero rating without quite defining what exactly it is for that person who might not have any idea. How would we say what is zero rating?
So zero rating is to sell the price with only the margins added for the profit. So if it costs the company to, like, let's say 7 rand to bake bread. So obviously they will add their margins for their profit, but they won't have the value-added tax.
Okay.
Because bread is one of the things that we use on our daily basis.
It's a basic need.
Yeah.
So basically, as long as there's no VAT,
yeah,
then that's a zero-rated item.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So what has South Africa decided to add as part of the zero-rated items?
Well, I wouldn't say the South Africans as a whole, but the panel came to a conclusion whereby therefore announced last week that the white bread, cake flour, and sanitary towels will, as from the 1st of April 2019, be tax-free.
That's good news.
That's good news for all South Africans, I guess. I think we should work on adding more things to the list.
Yeah. I don't know about the revenue, but at least people can afford what they really need to be able to afford.
Yeah. And if we go to our third and final story.
What do we have?
The question is, will Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille resign?
Helang.
That's a big question.
It is.
So it says Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille has been in a spate with the DA over allegations of oversight, corruption, strained relationships, yeah, and there's more.
Mm.
Yeah, so there have been internal investigations by the Democratic Alliance as well as external law firm about whether she was involved in any maladministration or corruption or whether she allowed it to happen under her watch.
Mm.
So it's quite a very, very complicated story that's happening in Cape Town. So when you apply this, so there were two reports from Bowman...
Jill Fillon.
There were two reports from Bowen and Jill Fillon, whereas the first one found that de Lille was actually not guilty of misconduct for not reporting tender whereas the first found that de Lille was not actually guilty of misconduct of not reporting tender irregularities. The second one recommends that disciplinary hearing or disciplinary action should be taken and criminal charges should be laid against de Lille.
I am confused. How in the world do we have the same law firm that comes with two different reports, two different conclusions? That doesn't even begin to make sense.
Such matters should be taken to external forensic investigation. Yeah. So the problem is that in an agreement with the party leader, Musima Imani, in August, she agreed to resign on the 31st of October should the disciplinary hearing against her be dropped.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah. Is she going to resign?
I wonder whether she'll still have
a job. Going back to the first question. Well, she has already been in court on Monday to file an application against the outcome of the latest Bowman forensic report. She had also tabled a letter of resignation, which the DA had already accepted.
Yeah, so one access, I guess. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Siyabonga Mota, for our legal hotspot this week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspot.
As we continue the conversation, we asked you what you think about the DBS scandal. This is what you had to say.
I think it's extremely tough and difficult, you know, to have these type of scandals happen, like, directly to the black community. It really makes me wonder, what does black independence mean and look like? And I think this should never, like, this, if this is the precedent of, like, what we mean by supporting black, then we are really under siege. And I hope that this can be a lesson to all of us, that if really we are to do legitimate things, we are to also behave in an honorable way. People must account. You know, accountability is a real problem in this country, and I feel like these things are further appropriating that thing, that lack of accountability.
Like, in general, like, just African leaders are still very... they have the win on my own mindset type of thing. Like, it's not for the people.
We're not doing enough to conquer it, you know. So I feel like the best way to get out of this mess, if we get a new, like a whole new system, a whole new from the president down, maybe to get younger people that are more serious and well educated to like handle these things, because wow, we've given these people a chance, and then look at what's happening now. So it's time for change. It's time for new management to take place, because we really can't do this anymore.
They should face the charges, because they can't just steal money. Because I heard that the money that was stolen from the VBS, it was stolen by our governmental organs. I don't know if it's fake news or all that, but I think they need to face the charges. Because remember, you can't steal from your people. You're supposed to fight for your people and provide for your people, for them to live a sustainable life, like you promised to them when they elected for you. So why lose that? Why lose that value or that norm when you get into power? You know, power drives people crazy. Because in most cases, when you vote for like political parties, in the beginning they're like, okay, we're going to provide. They make some changes in our townships and all that. But immediately when they get into power, all that just vanishes. I think it starts from the leaders, because obviously corruption starts over there in the government, in the governmental organs and all that. So we should actually, each time when we vote, we should make sure that we take our economic status into mind. Because in most of the cases when we vote for our leaders, we don't take our economic status into mind. We only care about the politics that are happening right now. We don't actually think about the future, the economic development, all that. So I think we should try and change the leadership. And when the elections come next year, I really think that we should stand up and really fight for what we want, if we want to, if we really want to gain from our government.
Why community is focusing more on the 16 million, whereas there was two billion rands in the bank? Where is the other 2 billion? Because this 16 million is like nothing compared to the other part. Where is the other part? Because we are hearing people say that there is nothing. There are zeros only. It's like so we want to know where the other, where the whole of the 2 billion is, and who are the people who were put in like authority of this money? Because I'm sure they were educated, and how can money just disappear in front of educated individuals? What does that say about our education and implementing it and stuff? Because I just don't see money disappearing just like that. It shouldn't even come out in the news. It's embarrassing to the South African community.
It was very unethical for like people to just misuse other people's money like that. And it's wrong. It's wrong, and they should repay the money, because it's not theirs. That's my opinion on the VBS scandal.
Your focus. Point of information.
VBS was launched as a Vendor Building Society Mutual Bank in 1982. It registered with the South African Reserve Bank in 1993. In pursuit to obtain economic transformation, it is stated on its website that in 2014 it became 100% black-owned. Although its head offices are based in Johannesburg, its mission was to first establish its footprint in Limpopo. It has come to light that in the manner in which the business was operating was in nature fraudulent. The Great Bank Heist found that it was principally involved in the taking of deposits from retail depositors, including burial societies and stock files. In turn, it mainly lent money to its clients to acquire immovable property secured by mortgage bonds. It also made short-term loans to its clients against the security of the deposits they had made with the bank. For the longest time, it was just a bank getting by, until 2014, when it sought to rely on deposits from municipalities to stay afloat. It bribed municipal officials for the payments, despite the fact that it is illegal for municipalities to pay deposits to mutual banks. It broadened its client base to accommodate more ambitious and potentially lucrative contracts. Its loan book denoted that its loans were for property, but extended to overdrafts and vehicles. There were many rewards awarded to middlemen or consultants that were paid during this time, various amounts ranging from 500,000 rand to 2 million rand of bribes. Monies were also paid to front companies monthly. DBS's Ramavunga suggested that it is common practice for banks to pay middlemen commissions for assisting the bank in soliciting deposits, which is exactly what they did. We are now joined on the line by Lebohang Silipe from SASPO. Lebohang, welcome to Law Focus. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Millicent, and welcome to your viewers as well. I greet your viewers as well.
Thank you. We're going to get right into it. We know that there's been a scandal that has unfolded at VBS. The bank heist report was revealed 2 weeks ago. How has this affected you as the union?
Well, Millicent, worried and disappointed is, you know, it's the least we can really say about how we have been impacted as the union in terms of what has transpired at CBS. You know, when the curator was instated on the 11th of March already, you know, that set a course to say that there was a certain crisis, which appeared to be a liquidity crisis at the time. We welcomed the curatorship as a union because, you know, this was not the first time we would be experiencing a curatorship in one of our institutions. But essentially, that was an indication of, you know, an attempt to save the bank, because if we save the bank, in essence, we would be saving workers' jobs, in essence. Mm. So when the scandal, you know, unraveled itself as we now know it, you know, it became extremely disappointing. The fact that, you know, people's lives have been put at risk, people's jobs have been put at risk, the public, the poor's money has been put at risk in such a manner. It really has been really morbidly disappointing.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, I mean, what plan is there following the scandal to ensure that employees of VBS are protected? I mean, already there's been so many retrenchments that have happened. Are there alternatives?
At this point in time, Millicent, you know, throughout this process, we've been in consultation with the employer, which was the creator, around, you know, measures of trying to avoid retrenchments, you know, reducing the number of impacted workers, and on obviously looking at, you know, what type of impact and assistance, what type of impact would there be on employees, and what type of assistance would be given on those who are retrenched. So we have actually, in this process, looked at different alternatives. And as a union, we just unfortunately could not stop the retrenchments that we see here today. But we were impactful in how exactly that process unfolded and how many would have been retained and how many would have actually been impacted. Mm. So at this point in time where we are sitting, the bank, we envision that the bank will continue with the retained employees. It will be a different form and structure going forward in terms of its functioning. But with the ones who are actually, who have received their notice of termination on the 12th of October, we envisage and continue to engage with the curator in order to finalize what exactly they will be taking home in form of severance and other types of financial assistance. Mm. So that is the process that has unfolded. That is what we have done on our side, and that You know, we also intend on calling upon the Reserve Bank, you know, to meet with us so that we can, you know, air the plight of workers impacted and those who are also retained as well, to see how is the Reserve Bank going to assist these employees.
Yeah.
So we are still continuing with that conversation. We still intend, you know, we intend on not going silently on this.
Mm. And I'm wondering, you are still, you know, trying to get into talks with various stakeholders and other people to assist the situation. What's the best outcome that could achieve from that? Do you think these people will be able, because, I mean, who's going to employ them? Are you going to help them to get employment again? What's the plan as you try and talk to the Reserve Bank and other people?
Yes, this is exactly what we would have liked to see. You know, us engaging the Reserve Bank, us engaging the curator, you know, and us engaging other stakeholders, our affiliated trade union, COSATU as well, you know, is standing firm behind us on this. We know that the government is also a stakeholder to say, you know, let's put pressure, let's speak to labor. It shouldn't just be a conversation from labor, it should be government and business to come to the party to say, what do we do with these workers who have been now retrenched from VBS, you know, through no fault of their own, who now have to live with the stigma of having been employed by VBS, you know, and trying to find alternative work, you know, having that particular stigma is going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Because now you are tainted by this, you know, this irreparable damage that has been caused,
yeah,
you know, from a reputational perspective.
And I'm wondering,
so we need to encourage business, and by business I refer to other banks and whatever local businesses are around who can and absorb these workers.
Mm.
So there's a huge responsibility on us.
Absolutely.
In that regard.
And I'm wondering whether you have any views on the policing organizations that are meant to monitor the banking sector. Should they not have foreseen the scandal? Could they not have prevented it before it actually erupted? What do you think? What do you say about those people?
You see, this is the question that was even posed to the Reserve Bank, if you've seen in the latest media, to say, I mean, as the supervising authority, you know, how did they not pick up
exactly,
you know, what actually transpired? And it just goes to show the depth of this deceit, you know, that we see as this fraudulent debacle. And you know, that's why Mr. Advocate Mutau called it a bank heist.
Yeah.
It really was a heist. Because they cleaned up, they covered up their you know, the loose ends so tight that it wouldn't have been possible for even those supervising authorities. I mean, if the internal and external auditors who are actually supposed to be the watchdogs, who are supposed to be, you know, the next level of supervision and you know, who do the checks and balances to ensure that what the bank is declaring is actually, you know, true and, you know, a true reflection of its finances. If that is the case, how then do we, as external parties, then not know this,
yeah,
you know?
Mm.
If the internal auditors and the external auditors are part and parcel of the fraud, it's very difficult
to
then know about this, yes.
Yeah.
But it now tells us going forward that there are now new levels or new measures, types of measures that have to be put in place, you know, to try and avoid such things.
Mm. If you've just joined us, we're speaking to Lebohang Silipe, who is the National Secretary of SASBO, which is the South African Society of Bank Officials, about the impact of the VBS scandal that has just recently broken out, to the extent that there have been retrenchments of so many employees at the bank. I'm wondering, Lebohang, are you in a position to sue the bank in a class action on behalf of the workers?
Well, listen, this is one of the conversations we've been having ourselves as well, to say, you know, where can we really take this, you know? And that is a clear possibility. Mm. That is one of the possibilities. Those one of the options we could take. But we want to make sure that we have exhausted all measures, you know, before we can even take it that far. We want to see you know, if there really is an appetite, you know, from the three legs that I've just mentioned in terms of from labor, government and business, you know, to try and save this particular bank, because that's actually all that, that is going to count here. That's what's going to matter here. If we can all see if there is that appetite, and should that come to fruition, you know, we wouldn't have to take such lengths. But yes, it is a definite possibility.
Do you think that the current status quo of how the banking sector operates, should the laws that protect it and, you know, ensure that it's operational accordingly, do you think there needs to be any amendments to avoid and prevent such extreme effects of workers if, and, you know, we hope not, that such a scandal breaks out in future in another bank or something of the sort?
You know, Millicent, you know, we already have such very good governance in the finance sector, you know, with different types of bodies. We, you know, we've got the FSCA, we've got FIC, we've got, you know, we've got BASA regulating the banking industry. We've got a lot of bodies that actually do very strict regulations as it is. But, you know, it becomes unfortunate when, knowing very well and having these systems in place, they still, when there's an element of dishonesty, it is very difficult to track that. If an external body who is actually supposed to, you know, to sign off those checks and balances and ensure that there has been no such misrepresentation, you know, I don't think it goes to question what we currently have as a system. I don't believe there's anything wrong with the current system. Surely, probably, there may be a need to now have probably stricter regulations when it comes to probably the auditing functions, and now who's going to audit the auditors, you know, kind of thing. You never really set up a system thinking that there could be some, you know, interference or what we call manipulation.
Yeah.
You don't expect that because there's strict regulations in the finance industry around that. Manipulation, misrepresentation, dishonesty and all of that. So it has been a very unfortunate set of events. But I do believe that there is probably some work that can still be done with regards to that. But as I believe currently the systems we have in place are already, you know, world-class in a way.
Okay. Well, what's the way forward now, you know? What's next?
What is next, as I said, we are actually planning a march in Limpopo with COSATU, the provincial COSATU office in Limpopo on the 15th of November. We will be marching to protest outside VBS branches, and that is to just to highlight, you know, the plight of workers, those who have been impacted. What is the future of the bank? You know, where are we going? We need to really engage in those conversations and make sure the plight of the voiceless, you know, is heard in this country, and hopefully that will, you know, bring the Reserve Bank to come to the party, get the curator to come back to the party as well in having that conversation. Because I don't think this affects just VBS workers. This is, as a nation, I think, you know, this has shaken us so much, because now you can imagine what's happening in, even in other industries, this is so possible, in other organizations also possible. So I think it's really a wake-up call for all of us,
absolutely,
you know, to stand up against corruption, stand up against, you know, malpractice and misrepresentation, manipulation, things like this. You know, the moral fiber of society, you know, it needs to come back, you know, to good ethics and codes and that, which is what we would even encourage the generation coming, you know, after us. Our future leaders need to be groomed in that regard.
Thank you, Lebohang Selepe, for joining us here tonight on Law Focus.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
That was Lebohang Silipe, who is the National Secretary of the South African Society of Banking Officials, highlighting their disappointment over the corruption at VBS. They are also in engagements with the Curator and Reserve Bank and are appealing to labor, government and business to assist retrenched workers. She also indicated that there is a planned march at the VBS offices in Limpopo on the 15th of November. You are still tuned into Law Focus on VAWFM 88.1.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VAWFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
There are complexities surrounding the VBS matter. Another black-owned business in trouble. The unlawful taking of public funds. The involvement of state institutions like PIC. The potential involvement of other state institutions like PRASA. The audacity to see institutions like Transnet and SAA as fertile ground for corrupt dealings. Yet again, the breaking of trust by state officials who are supposed to be guarding public money, the bankruptcy of municipalities because of this debacle, the loss of deposits by clients who are now hindered from obtaining their monies from the bank, the loss of employment by ordinary South Africans trying to make an innocent living, and the very sad and disappointing revelations about political parties receiving money from VBS. The ANC is alleged to have received up to 2,250,000 rand from VBS, whereas the relatives of the EFF's president and vice president are said to have received payments too. A few days ago, it came to the fore that Julius Malema's cousin received almost 6 million rand of irregular payments from VBS. Earlier this month, it was reported that Brian Shivambu is alleged to have been given 16 million rand. It was further reported that he gave his brother Floyd Shivambu 10 million rand and the EFF was given a donation of 1 million rand, claims which the EFF vehemently dismissed. Take a listen to this.
There's never been any 10 million that came into my account. So, the misleading information which Daily Maverick has is deliberate. It's part of the whole propaganda machinery. To do all of these things. We can challenge this Paulie Van Wyk to bring us the so-called evidence that I received 10 million. It's pure insanity. It's madness of people who want to say that we received 10 million. If let's say, let's leave being a journalist, be a patriot in South Africa and go to a police station and say, here's the evidence that Floyd Shivambu received 10 million from VBS. Go to the police station and report that. There will never be any such. Also, the bank that I bank with would have called me in if I received 10 million rand to ask me on what basis are you receiving 10 million rand, because the regulations that deal with money movements in South Africa places an obligation on banks to caution its customers and its clients on the monies that are coming there and are not explained. I've never been called by the bank saying that come and explain some 10 million, which is not existing anyway. So let us just dismiss the insanity that came from Daily Maverick. It's part of the agenda of the establishment that seeks to undermine the efforts that we're putting. And of course they want to somehow weaken our position, because before the Standing Committee of on Finance now, there are three private members' bills that are tabled by the economic freedom fighters. One is the Banks Amendment Bill, two is the South African Reserve Bank Amendment Bill, and then three is the General Anti-Tax Avoidance Bill. And almost all of these issues speak to the banking system and money movements and taxation and everything else there. So they want to get an opportunity that every time we justify for the passing of this legislation, they would always shout VBS. Yeah, you took money from VBS. We never took any money from VBS. And anyone who thinks that we did so is mad. Thank you very much.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VAWFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus, Law Focus on VAWFM 88.1. Point of information.
We understand that you work for the Ombudsman for Banking Services. Please advise us on the work that you actually do.
Yes, I do indeed work for the Ombudsman for Banking Services. And what this office does, Millicent, is that we adjudicate over complaints that are submitted by bank customers about their banks. And these complaints are related to bank products, bank service, or maladministration that might have taken place.
Mm. And for the sake of clarity then, what is the hierarchy of accountability within the banking sector?
Yes.
Who's accountable to who?
Yes. So in the banking sector, accountability is 100% for the bank as far as its products and its services. And then as bank customers, we also do have the responsibility and accountability to understand and to be clear about the products that we are purchasing or even when we are engaging with the bank. So it's actually a shared responsibility or shared accountability between both the bank and its customer.
Okay, and with regards, okay, if we had to put customers aside for a moment, within you as the people, the institutions, like we've got the Banking Association of South Africa, we've got you as the ombudsman, who regulates who polices each other? How does that work?
Sure. So the Banking Association's role is indeed that of a regulator. And for all of the South African banks, in fact, for all of the banks that are members of the Banking Association. And then as an ombudsman, our responsibility and accountability is that of an adjudicator or a mediator. So our terms of reference, for instance, stipulates that this office has to function as an independent office, and it has to be impartial. What that means is it cannot be biased. It cannot be biased towards the bank or the bank customer. It cannot form its determinations or resolutions with the influence from the bank or even from the bank customer. So we are the middleman. And our responsibility as an ombudsman is to look at the facts or the events that have occurred, apply our terms of reference, apply the banking laws and law in general, and then come up with a solution.
Mm. It sounds complicated. It sounds like a bit of a difficult place to be in sometimes.
Yes.
And in the case of corruption in the banking sector, is it something that is prevalent?
Mm-hmm. Look, I cannot answer that question because we are not in a position to know if there is indeed corruption, who is the corrupter, and what exactly are they corrupt over in the banks. If you ask us about fraud in the banking sector, that I can respond to, and yes, there is indeed fraud.
Okay.
And even with that, when it comes to the fraud occurring, the complaints that we get in the Office of the Ombudsman, they vary in nature and in type. There's online banking-related complaints. There's ATM-related complaints. And in a lot of these complaints, we see that a lot of fraudulent activity has happened. It is not caused by the customer. It is not caused by the banks. It's caused by a third criminal party, the fraudsters or syndicates or scammers who are actually in the business of scamming bank customers.
Can you kindly please take us through the process of lodging a complaint against your bank with the OBS?
Yes. It's a very simple process, Millicent. When, as a bank customer, you realize that you have got a problem and a complaint that you would like to lodge, we advise customers to start with their bank. The bank is where you have the relationship with. The bank is where your account or your product is housed. So you start with them. Every bank has got what they call a dispute resolution department. So you start with the dispute resolution department at the bank, and you lodge your complaint formally and in writing with them. They, then you have to give them 20 working days to respond to you. When they don't respond within that time frame, then one may lodge a complaint with the ombudsman. If they do respond within that time frame, but you are unsatisfied or unhappy with their response, one can still contact the ombudsman. What we will do then is we've got what we call an application for assistance form. One then completes this form. It's a very simple form. It requires your personal information, and in there it has a page where it gives you the space to explain or to tell us about what it is happened, and it also asks you for what outcome do you want, and then we take the process from there. But quite a very simple one, and one can lodge a complaint with the office over the phone. One can lodge a complaint on email, and one can also lodge a complaint via fax.
How many complaints would you say you guys receive in a day?
On a day, we receive, I would say, an average of about 20 complaints. This is because on a and the reason I am saying average of about 20, we do get inquiries. We do get or phone calls that are complaints. However, we do not have the jurisdiction for them, so they are for another ombudsman because they are about a different industry. Otherwise, in terms of actual valid complaints, I would say average 20. Two persons can lodge a complaint with the bank ombudsman, a natural person, which would be a bank customer, mm-hmm. and also a small company. A small company that does not have an annual turnover of more than 10 million. We have not received complaints from both of these type of customers about any types of irregularities from banks. However, the complaints, because they are also about irregularities, but those are focused on bank products and on bank service.
Okay, so bank products and bank service are most of the complaints that you get.
Yes, basically. And it's mostly from individual bank account or personal bank account holders.
Mm. So now when one of your member banks is involved in a financial scandal of some sort, what is the process that the ombud then will have to undertake to ensure that justice with regards to, I don't know, I don't have a better word to call it. You try to explain, you know, the issue of corruption, but let's say maladministration or fraud or irregularities that has unveiled. How what's the process that you guys would take if that person is obviously your member?
Yes. So with the regulation of banks, like I had said before, that is with the banking association. In our case, what this office will respond to is when a formal complaint has been lodged with us. So if we are aware about what has happened in particular to a certain bank, we may not give any comments about it, because another added value about our service or what the Ombudsman for Banking Services offers is also confidentiality. So we may not disclose information about our customers, even about the member banks who complaints have been lodged against. So in the case where there is certainly something that is taking place in the market or in the industry or even in the media, to be more particular, we may not comment about that. And if we do give our comments or our opinions, we may not be specific. Mm. Because remember, we are also obligated, according to our terms of reference, to function as an office that is impartial.
So what can South Africa expect from you as the ombud with regards to representing the interests of the public as per your mandate? You know, things like uprooting prima facie corruption and irregularities that might be there in the banking sector.
You know, our responsibility as an ombud is not only just in the adjudication or resolving the complaints that occur between a bank and their bank customer, but consumer education is something we are quite strong at as well. Mm. Interviews like these are something that we do on a regular basis, but our marketing strategy actually has a very strong consumer education goal in it. We travel throughout South Africa. We try and endeavor to reach as many communities as possible. We do believe that in this case, information is indeed power, and that is what we want to continue to do for the consumer, to empower them with the information to be able to protect their bank accounts, because let's remember, your bank account is where you keep your hard-earned living, your hard-earned income.
Yeah.
So to empower South Africans with information about how to protect their bank accounts, subsequently protecting their income, is what we commit to continue doing.
Mm. We are aware that there are investigations of irregularity at VBS. The Financial Sector Regulation Act is being used to ensure that those corrupt activities, if there are any, the allegations that have been brought forth, should be dealt with. Do you have your own separate investigation currently underway?
I cannot make comments on that, Millicent.
However, do you have some listeners here who have some questions that they would like you to answer from some of the experiences that they are undergoing? The one says, I went to withdraw from an ATM and my bank card was not ejected. My money was withdrawn by someone else in a matter of seconds, and my bank says it cannot assist to get my money back. What can I do?
That does indeed sound like an ATM scam or an ATM fraud related instance. In a case like that, I'd like to invite that bank customer to contact our office and lodge a complaint. So as it relates to ATM scams, there's what's called card cloning. And this is where the scammer will have a device in the ATM slot. And as you put your card in there, it copies it. And also as you are putting your PIN in there, they are able to see or to copy the PIN that you are putting in there. And it happens in various forms. You might get the money that you went there to withdraw and you actually get it out and you get it with your card, but you notice later that transactions or withdrawals are taking place in your account and you are not at those ATMs and it's not you. So card cloning is also quite rife with regards to ATM related fraud. I'd like to invite that customer to make contact with the bank ombudsman.
Another listener here says, I am not clear on what is happening with my bank, but they are not allowing me to withdraw more than 1,000 rand a day. And I want to withdraw all my money, but I'm restricted. What can he or she do?
We've got a choice as a bank customer about the amount or the limit of daily withdrawals that we can set in our account. And that is your choice.
Mm.
It's not the bank's. It's your choice as the customer. So that's one. And then if you are in a situation where you want to withdraw more than the daily limit that you have set, you've got the option of going inside the bank and actually doing and doing the withdrawal transaction inside the bank with the teller. But the decision and the choice are yours, the bank customers. As long as there is sufficient funds in your account, you may withdraw what you require from your bank account.
How can people get a hold of you?
Yes. There's a number of ways to get hold of the Ombudsman's office.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a share call number. That is 0860-800-900.
Mm-hmm.
Our website is www.obsfa.co.za. One can also contact us by email, info@obsfa.co.za.
Okay.
We've got a fax number.
Yeah.
May I give
yes,
the fax number?
Please go ahead.
Okay. 011-483-3212. Millicent, I think it's also very important for me to say that we also do take in walk-ins. So people may also come to the office of the Ombudsman, and it's situated at number 34 Fricker Road on the ground floor in Illovo, Johannesburg.
Okay. Thank you so much, Uzile, for the interview, for joining us this evening on Vow FM. We appreciate it.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having us, Millicent.
That was Uzile Gugushe, who highlighted how, as the Ombudsman for Banking Services, they operate. And they gave detailed information on grounds for which you can seek help from them. You are still tuned to Law Focus on 5M88.1.
Law Focus. Point of information.
As we reflect on tonight's discussion, we spoke to Lebohang Selepe, who is the National Secretary of SASBO, who spoke very strongly against the corruption that has unraveled at VBS, iterating that those who are involved in the scandal be held accountable, citing also that the oversight of monitoring agencies is disappointing, and also appealing to various business sectors to reach out to the now unemployed former employees of VBS who sadly have attached to them the stigma of their association with VBS. We were also in conversation with Uzile Gugushe, who highlighted important information about the Ombudsman for Banking Services as an institution that you can approach when you face any difficulty with your bank or its services. This includes any issues of maladministration. Find them on 086-080-0900. Otherwise, check out their website, www.obssa.co.za. We attempted to get a view from the Department of Justice, the Hawks, Corruption Watch, and the National Prosecuting Authority, all of whom either did not take our calls or turned us down for an interview, citing that they cannot comment on the matter whilst the investigations are still imminent. As it stands, we know that the ANC has released a statement from the National Integrity Commission recommending to the NEC that implicated members in the VBS saga step down. We will keep watching the story closely for you. From our producer, Bulali Diakop, our technical producer, Kutwano Sirame, as well as our law focus researchers, Siabonga Mota and Veronica Mukwadi, and myself, Millicent Ndiweni, thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Law Focus on VFM 88.1. Point of information. Law Focus Podcast.